Hello and welcome to the Majlis, a podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. May 3rd has passed just like any other day in Central Asia. If not all, most of the state-run media organizations in the region did not even mention the fact that it was the World Press Freedom Day. Maybe because of obvious reasons that the press in Central Asia remains far from being free. In fact, last year there were further decline in freedom of press in the region, which is already at the bottom of the list. The decline in Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan was particularly notable, and Turkmenistan continued to crack down against few remaining journalists. Increasing harassment of reporters were also the highlight of the year in Tajikistan and in Kazakhstan. On today's Majlis Central Asia podcast, we will look into the performance of Central Asian countries on freedom of press, progress and setbacks in the scenarios for the future. To discuss the subject, I have Nat Shenkan, who is the Project Director of Nations in Transit at the Freedom House. Nat is joining us from New York today. Johan Beer is joining us from Paris. He's the Director for Eastern Europe and Central Asian Desk at the Reporters Without Borders. And from Prague, my colleague Bruce Panier is joining us, who is the editor of Kishlok Owozi, a blog by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Majlis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. Last week we had several major reports on freedom of press, one of them released by Freedom House and the other by Reporters Without Borders. We are delighted that today we have a representative from both of these organizations, and there are plenty of things to talk about, especially because of significant decline in freedom of press in two Central Asian countries. Kyrgyzstan, which used to be the freest country in Central Asia, but it is ranking dropped significantly in last reporting period, and then Uzbekistan. This is also very interesting because after two decades of Karimov's iron rule, the country changed the leadership, and there were hopes, and some circles still hope changes for the better. But here you go. Freedom of press appears to be declining further. So let's start with you, Johan. Please describe us the overall picture, in particularly cases of these two countries, Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. Why did you drop their ranking?
Indeed, the situation with press freedom across all Central Asia in general has further deteriorated, as exemplified by our latest press freedom index. So Kyrgyzstan has dropped four places and now ranks 89th out of 180 countries, but it still remains by far the first country in the area. So Uzbekistan, as you mentioned, ranks 169th out of 180 countries. So Uzbekistan remains one of the worst countries in the world for press freedom. Interestingly, I must first note that the time period of this edition of the index is from January to December 2016.
Oh, okay.
So, for instance, the release of Muhammad Bekjanov, one of the journalists that was... Exactly. In the world, this happened this year, so it was not recorded. But indeed, we can still note that the replacement of President Karimov by President Mirziyoyev in Uzbekistan indeed raises hopes due to what appears to be an increased pragmatism of the regime. But still, everything remains to be done in terms of press freedom. Let me recall that at least nine other journalists remain behind bars in Uzbekistan in appalling conditions, with tuberculosis, for instance, reaching all of the detainees. And some of these journalists are in jail since 1999. This is just about the jailed journalists, but the censorship has increased over the past few years again, especially on the internet. Some of the major independent internet resources have been forced out of business. Their correspondents who work clandestinely are increasingly harassed, and the control of the authorities on the internet has only increased. So everything really remains to be done for President Ziyoyev to prove that he indeed wishes to improve the press freedom record in his country.
Okay. Ned, feel free to jump in. Yeah, I wanted to add on to that about Mirziyoyev and about the Uzbekistan that, yes, there's been this wave of expectations after Karimov's death in August and a lot of attention to whether there could be some kind of thaw in Uzbekistan. This was something we discussed very heavily, especially in Nations in Transit this year when we were evaluating not only the media but other parts of the governance situation in Uzbekistan. Our conclusion was that even with the scores being as low as they are on Uzbekistan, there just wasn't enough yet to go on to improve them, and this included in the media sector. At the same time, we did note a few little signs of cracks, I guess, or potential areas where there could be just very slight thaws. There was a slightly different tone in some of the coverage that was made available online. These are on independent news sites like kun.uz, where the reporting, for instance, on the presidential campaign in December mentioned Mohamed Saleh, the exiled opposition leader, without denouncing him. That's kind of the standard that we're looking at, is that's an improvement. Or a little bit of coverage of the OSCE ODIHR recommendations concerning the campaign that was neutral coverage, or some accurate reporting on Uzbekistan's rating on freedom on the net. So it's this kind of very minor stuff right now. It's something perhaps to build on. But I think, like Johan said, there's still a very, very long way to go before we regard these as significant improvements.
Ned, so let's put this a little bit straight. So your scores or a category ranking is based on what? I mean, number of journalists detained, reported case of harassment. I was just wondering how you come up with these numbers or category.
Right. So first, two different reports, Nations in Transit and Freedom of the Press. Nations in Transit has an independent media section. But Freedom of the Press, which focuses very closely on this, has a whole range of questions that are answered very specifically with their own numeric scores, first by the authors and then by Freedom House and its advisors. So this includes in the legal environment, in the political environment, and in the economic environment. And those questions are all weighted slightly differently depending on the importance of them. And then that creates a cumulative score. And for Uzbekistan, that makes it, it leaves it with a score on a 100-point scale of 95, which is, for us, 197th out of 199 countries and territories that we evaluate. And in fact, Turkmenistan is below that, is 198th in our ranking, with a score of 98 out of 100, which is the same score as North Korea.
We will definitely talk about Turkmenistan. Sorry, Bruce, I wanted to come to this question earlier. But anyhow, so how is this further decline on freedom of press reflected on the ground in day-to-day life of journalists and their ability to report from the region?
Obviously, it varies a little bit from country to country, but I think, you know, we can talk generally about Central Asia as a region now and say that, you know, it's pretty much become a lot harder across the board for any kind of journalism. You know, Uzbekistan, as Johan and Nate have mentioned, we're still waiting to see what happens there. But we've seen even in Turkmenistan, for instance, where it was already horrible. Of course, we have some of our own people who have encountered all kinds of problems. We have one correspondent in jail. We have another one who was temporarily detained and released not so long ago. But even in Kazakhstan, last year after the protests that they had in April and May, and then they had some incidents which they called terrorism in Aktobe and Almaty later in the summer, you know, and they went after journalists for that, people that were putting information up even on Facebook sites and things, you know, and to shut them down about what kind of information was out there, what was happening in the country, you know, what was going on, what was the government's response. And these people, you know, came forward and released some of the information and ended up being detained, and some of them are still detained by the authorities. Tajikistan, you know, what can you say? Just today they said 20 Tajik journalists have fled the country last year. It's that bad. And Kyrgyzstan, which is, you know, I know that it's still ahead of the other ones, but, you know, with these court cases that the president or his team, the government, has filed against several media organizations, us included.
16, to be precise, I learned yesterday.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's unprecedented. I know Kyrgyzstan is ahead of everybody else, but under Akayev, under Bakiyev, even them, we didn't see this many media organizations facing this kind of problems. They did have different problems, but they didn't. There wasn't so many at one time in court or facing some kind of lawsuit. So you'd have to say, you know, like I said, across the board, it just gotten a lot worse. Some of this might be the fact that that they're going experiencing some economic problems right now, and the government would like to be the sole narrator of what the events are, of course, to paint a slightly more rosy picture of the situation. Mm. But, they've really come down hard on journalists, independent journalism, with the possible exception of Kyrgyzstan. Independent journalism is just practically squeezed out from the other four countries now.
Definitely we'll come to the reasoning behind this pressure. The other thing, Johan, I think the physical consequences to journalists is one thing, but even worst enemy of the free press in our region is the threat of consequences, which leads to various sort of self-censorship among journalists, and it is difficult to document such intimidations also. So let's talk a little bit about the types of common threat on press in Central Asia, which you might have come across during your reporting period.
Sure. First of all, to answer also the question you asked previously on the methodology of the Press Freedom Index. So we compile the data on the violations of press freedom across the year, so from 1st January to 31st of December last year. And the index is also based on a questionnaire, which is filled out by many journalists, experts, human rights defenders, both in the field and obviously in exile for a couple of countries such as Turkmenistan. This questionnaire tries to weigh, to assess the situation in six issues: the level of pluralism, the level of independence of the media. Self-censorship is also one of the issues that are assessed. So we asked journalists and experts to try and assess the environment in which they work. So not only self-censorship, but also the environment, meaning are they free to report without being insulted, intimidated, defamed, etc., etc. The legislative framework then is taken into consideration. Transparency, which means to what extent the state is open to civil society and journalists, and the level of infrastructure in the country and the willingness of the authorities to maintain or develop them. So this is for the methodology of the Press Freedom Index. Regarding your question on some common features, some common problems that journalists would face across the region, as Bruce said, well, situations of course vary greatly from between different countries, but we can note, for instance, with great something which is very worrying is increasing habit entirely control the internet across Central Asia, not only across Central Asia. This is a global trend, but it is well exemplified. For instance, in May last year, when Kazakhstan was marred by huge protests, the authorities were quick to make Facebook, Twitter, Kontaktier, WhatsApp, etc. unavailable, which obviously prevented the free flow of information. Such kind of progress also has been made in Tajikistan. Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan have mastered internet censorship for years, but this is increasingly seen as a norm. And what is also more and more widespread, and here the trend in Kyrgyzstan is very problematic, is the attitude of the authorities, so the president or the first people of the state. How do they talk about journalism? How do they talk about journalists? Increasingly defiant speech of President Atambayev in Kyrgyzstan has been very worrying, with very harsh words being pronounced and journalists being colluded with various, vectors of destabilization, be they paid from outside forces or from inside, extremist or even terrorist forces. So this kind of really worrying rhetoric has been increasingly widespread, and it's not surprising that soon after that, pressures are do concretize, and so indeed, as you mentioned, President Atambayev has multiplied lawsuits against critical media, including RFERL. So This is something really to note, that defiant or aggressive rhetoric from the authorities is not only rhetoric, it's very quickly followed by concrete pressures against against independent or critical reporters.
Not to mention, Turkmenistan remains among the last three worst of the worst countries, ahead of North Korea and Eritrea. Talking about this country, our own reporter Nepes Kuliyev remains in jail from last 2 years. Another Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty reporter was detained and fortunately released during this reporting period. Harassment of remaining reporters have increased, and the reporters who were forced to step down 2 years ago couldn't resume their work. Even people who talk to journalists are questioned. I always wondered, what is that which keeps Eritrea or North Korea even further down the list compared to Turkmenistan?
Yeah, that's also a question I asked to myself and to colleagues. When I speak to my colleagues covering Eritrea or North Korea, it seems that we have even less information coming out of these countries, especially from North Korea, which is now at the very bottom of our press freedom index. We have almost no information about what's going on, and the kind of citizen journalism that you have efficiently developed and which still makes some news going out of the country, despite everything, of course, and despite the very harsh pressure, this simply doesn't exist. So there are, we can say, less press freedom violations in North Korea, say, because simply there is just no one to crack down on. Well, it doesn't mean, of course, that the situation is any better. And if you look at the scores of these three countries, they are quite close. So that's why we usually emphasize these last three countries of the index as a group, because well, one can hardly say that the situation is really worse than the situation in the other.
Interesting. It is just very striking to me as an ethnic Turkmen that I saw CNN reporting live from North Korea over the past 2 weeks, and which is just not possible in Turkmenistan. And Nate, coming to you. So these three countries, North Korea, Eritrea, Turkmenistan, are at the bottom of the list, since I know these reports, and that goes back to 10 or 12 years. So what's the next step if things get even worse? What's the other indicator that you could explain that?
Well, for us at Freedom House, we have a kind of worst of the worst. That's how we tend to frame it when we release the Freedom of the Press report, and that's essentially our bottom 10 countries. And in the worst of the worst, in Central Asia, you have both Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan, and of course Eritrea, North Korea, Crimea, Equatorial Guinea, Cuba, Syria, Iran, and Azerbaijan. There's a finite number that you can have when you have a set of questions that produces a set score. If you have a 100-point scale, at some point you might hit 100. We're at 98 on Turkmenistan right now, so there's really only a couple of points left, and I would say that those couple of points largely belong to this, you know, the kind of citizen journalism and the fact that a little bit of information seeps out nonetheless. Is it possible that that little tiny bit of information that seeps out could stop seeping out? I suppose so. And I suppose that would leave us with no choice but to drop those last 2 points, which would be unprecedented. And, you know, within Central Asia, I think if I looked back 5 or 6 or maybe 10 years, there was perhaps a sense that, well, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, these are countries where there still has been a kind of renewed Soviet approach. You know, the Soviet approach either never left or was only dropped for a very short period of time and then was picked right back up, that the media should be subordinate to the state and should advance the state's interests. So you saw that when people talked about Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, but we could say with the other three countries that, well, they're perhaps going in a slightly different direction, and maybe things, you know, that's the old-fashioned way, and it can't last. Well, in fact, what we've seen is the opposite. We've seen Kazakhstan, we've seen Tajikistan, and I would say now we're seeing Kyrgyzstan moving closer to that old approach. The old-fashioned approach is new again, where the media is not respected as an independent institution. The idea that journalists should be independent, that journalists should be able to gather information independently, report independently, or comment independently is not respected at all. In fact, the opposite. They are expected to toe the line, to advance whatever the talking points and the message that the state or the leader is trying to get out. And if they don't, they're going to be punished. And the unfortunate truth is we see that more and more around the world. And there really needs to be a recommitment to the idea that, yeah, journalists can be a pain in the butt. Media can be annoying, especially if you're in power. But that's the idea. That's the point. Mm. And we need to stand up for that and protect it.
Yeah. I just saw a headline of a statement that if press is not free, then you are not free. Very well said. So very bleak picture indeed. So now why all this is happening? Why the region not only remains at the bottom of the least free states index, but the situation continues to worsen? Were there any particular reason for sharp decline since last Press Freedom Day? And what were main drivers of such a decline and change in authorities' behavior towards the independent press? We will continue the Majlis discussing this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. Let me recap the debate first, that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's weekly podcast on Central Asia, we are discussing further decline in freedom of press in Central Asia and its possible reasons. Joining me in the discussion are Ned Schenken, Director of Freedom House's Nations in Transit Project, Johan Beer, Director of Reporters Without Borders Eastern Europe and Central Asia Desk, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia Blog, Kishlak Owaziai, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. And now, yes, the general picture of our region is as dark as it can get, but it is getting even darker. This was particularly notable in Kyrgyzstan. So what influenced this decline, Bruce, in this country where we had so much hope?
Well, you know, let's start out with the fact that it's a presidential election year in Kyrgyzstan. Under the constitution, the current president, Almazbek Atambayev, is obligated to leave office. There's a widely held belief that he would like to see a successor who looks favorably upon him. And by that, I just mean that wouldn't turn around and blame all the country's problems on him and possibly open an investigation on his financial dealings and things like that. So this is the background of what's happening with the media. Now, he's taken a lot of criticism since the end of last year because he wanted a constitutional referendum. It wasn't a very popular decision. People still have suspicions about his motives for calling this constitutional referendum and making changes to the constitution. But his political opponents in opposition parties, and I'm speaking first and foremost about Omurbek Tekibayev from the Atamak Ken party, you know, started to come out with alleged compromise on what Atambayev had been doing. Kyrgyzstan's media is very vibrant. They're very active. They seize upon these things and try to report on them as best as possible. And certainly Atambayev was feeling the heat from some of these reports. And he took very antagonistic view of an approach toward the media. And so that's why we've seen it wasn't just a case of him going after Tekibayev, who had first accused him of some kind of financial misdealings in the past and ulterior motives for changing the constitution and things like that. But the media that reported on that also became a target of Atambayev too, and that's why we have all these court cases going on right now. So it's kind of, you know, not even so much thin-skinned. I mean, all the Kyrgyz leaders have had to put up with this at one time or another. There's no doubt about it. But I think there was some suspicion where even if Atambayev hadn't done anything wrong at all, the fact that he was being accused of doing all these things and it was appearing in the media added a little bit of extra pressure that he did not appreciate, obviously. And so he acted in the way he did, which was through the legal system to file all kinds of cases against different media outlets. And, you know, that was one thing. And I could understand if he thought he'd been wrong that he would do this. But he's asking for huge sums of money in penalties. Mm. The amount of money that he expects these people to pay if they're proven guilty is for a lot of these media outlets, you know, just a death sentence. they can't pay that, and it will run them right out of business. So that's really the big problem with these court cases.
You know, Ned, lawsuits, as Bruce said, these are kind of interesting. What kind of strategy is this from your point of view? I mean, the examples in other Central Asian countries have been, if they don't like any particular journalist or the reporting of journalists, they find ways to put them in jail. And the ridiculous charges like drug trafficking, you know, it's famous in Central Asia. So Kyrgyzstan takes a new route in this. Explain the strategy of lawsuits and defamation laws.
There's two things to say on that. One is that we actually see kind of a mixed strategy in other countries, particularly in Kazakhstan, I would say, where defamation and libel suits have had a role for quite a while, in addition to some of those more aggressive tactics that you mentioned, like imprisonment. But you've had, there's a few, very few number of outlets in Kazakhstan that are continually in the crosshairs of the authorities. I have in mind Uralskaya Nedelya in Uralsk, Tribuna in its different iterations that has existed for a while. And these are constantly being subject to different kinds of libel and defamation suits. Some other papers have also been put out of business by them. So in a way, I think Atambayev is picking up on that. I do want to say, though, on Kyrgyzstan, that this has been something that's been coming down the pipe for a couple of years. And the warning lights have been flashing red since at least 2014. And on the media, I would say since 2015, maybe, in terms of increasing, escalating pressure on civil society and on activists for speaking their minds and for making statements in public. And of course, the big lawsuit and ownership change at Vecherny Bishkek, which was completed in 2015. And Vecherny Bishkek, of course, was an extremely important newspaper, the most influential Russian language paper in Kyrgyzstan. And Atambayev really went after it directly with a set of techniques that were based in the legal system and are something that we see a lot of in Eurasia, challenging the legality of the ownership and then having compliant courts and judiciary help you flip the ownership to someone who's friendlier. And what's happening now here in late 2016, early 2017, is a continuation of that, because one of the main outlets that's being targeted, Zanoza, is the successor to Vecherny Bishkek in terms of its owner, Alexander Kim, and its editor and a lot of its key staff are people who left Vecherny Bishkek after that. And of course, Alexander Kim is now himself facing criminal charges related to his previous ownership of Vecherny Bishkek. So it can seem sometimes like, oh, these are kind of isolated incidents or isolated defamation suits, or this stuff has just kind of popped up. It hasn't. You know, Atambayev's been building his war on the press for a couple of years. And the unfortunate truth is, I think he's making progress with it. He's also made a lot of progress in turning the public broadcaster into a propaganda outlet in a way that it really wasn't 6 or 7 years ago, and where there had been a ton of investment, especially by the international community, in trying to make an independent public broadcaster, that just has been defeated by the president. And he's made it so that it's now an attack dog for him in the same way it is in these much more authoritarian environments in the neighborhood.
Interesting. Johan, obviously, reasons behind the stalemate or decline varies from country to country in Central Asia, as you said. Coming to Tajikistan, in Kazakhstan, what's stopping the improvement or triggering the crackdown in these two countries against the press?
Both in Kazakhstan and in Tajikistan, well, we can say that aging leaders are on power, and succession wars have already started behind the curtains. So this is clearly a factor of stress for the political life and press freedom in these countries. And this, to some extent, explains the serious deterioration of press freedom in these two countries. The deterioration has been particularly striking in Tajikistan, which lost 33 ranks in our press freedom index in 2016. So now it ranks 149th out of 180 countries. Kazakhstan is just a little lower, ranking 157th. So yeah, we're saying that two aging leaders are trying to control the situation and ensure that their succession is taking the way they desire. Some in their entourage is clearly also having appetites. So there is an increasing sense of paranoia at the summit of these states. This paranoia is also, of course, increased by the economic problems. And of course, in the case of Tajikistan, there is instability, to say the least, in neighboring Afghanistan, which is also having echoes and which is nurturing worries in these countries. So this is to explain the increasing sense of paranoia. But I think that something also needs to be taken into consideration. And this is linked again to the overall decline of press freedom and of the idea of democracy and of democratic attitudes towards journalists. And in such a global environment, I feel that there is an increasing sense of impunity across Central Asia, and actually this is true for the whole world. So repression is becoming arrogant. Those that we call press freedom predators, yesterday's bad students, are now maybe convinced that they are in the vanguard of tomorrow's world. And this is a factor that can only nurture further decline of press freedom in these states, because they see that, the worst they treat press freedom, I wouldn't say the least pressure they get from the international community, but almost. There is not a huge amount of pressure on these states from the side of the international community. We can see that the European Union is continuing talks with Kazakhstan, for instance, about enhanced partnership agreements, despite the fact that the previous partnership agreement included some clear human rights conditions that were never fulfilled by Kazakhstan. Well, Tajikistan is also in a rather similar situation, and of course the rhetoric of President Trump in the U.S. And the increasing fortune of what is called illiberal democracies also can suggest them that the whole human rights system that was put in place after World War II was only a parenthesis that is now ending, and that, simply why not?
Interesting. Bruce, I heard the panelist is talking about overall decline in press freedom, but in Turkmenistan, this decline was happening forever. Now it is getting worse. Why is that?
Well, you know, as you better than most would know, we did have an opportunity to do some reporting from Turkmenistan pretty much throughout the history. There were some problems every now and then, but there seemed to be some tacit understanding that we had with the Turkmen government that if we just went out and reported on some of the very local socioeconomic problems, long lines for tickets for buses or something like that, this would seem to not ruffle the feathers in Ashgabat. They were willing to let that kind of go along. But recently, the socioeconomic problems are connected to the economic decline of the country at the moment. There's no getting around it. When you start reporting on food shortages, parts of salaries being garnished by the government so they can pay for construction of Ashgabat or these indoor games that they're holding later this year or something like that. I mean, these are problems that hit out across the board at all the people. You can't ignore them. There's something that across the country. So we were reporting on that. And fortunately, the economic decline is a reality of Turkmenistan. It's something that the Turkmen government cannot hide from its people at all, although it tries to the best of its ability. So, they seem to have figured that even the very little bit of reporting that we did about the social conditions in the country was too much, because it was hitting a sore spot in the government right now, something that they really couldn't address. In the past, they had enough money that they could fix these things. You know, the long lines for tickets for bus could be fixed by changing officials, and then everyone was kind of happy. The government was, if not grateful to us for bringing this problem to the attention of the people that were listening to us, at least it was something that was easily fixed. You get somebody new in charge of the bus station, the lines go away. But the problems that they got now can't be fixed. It shows that there's that the country's in deep crisis, and there's no getting around it. So what does the Turkmen government do? It turns around and silences any to the best of its ability, silences anything from us. And now they're in sole control of the narrative of what the country is like. And as we see, all the, in their daily news, everything's great in Turkmenistan. You know, it's the golden age, all this kind of stuff. The people obviously don't believe this because they have their lives are very different than what's being described on TV. But it did not help the Turkmen government to control information when you have a group like Asadlik that's reporting, that the people are waiting, sleeping outside the flour mill so that they can get a sack of 50 kilo sack of flour, hopefully 3 days from now when the place opens up and they've been camped out outside the place, you know. So this is one of the things that led the Turkmen government to clamp down on us, even the little bit of reporting that we were able to do, even harder than they had, you know, in the previous decade.
Net, so these things, like the challenges that Bruce was talking about in terms of economic crisis, so these things cannot be solved overnight, and I don't know when it will be solved. So where we are heading with India, what does the trend say?
Well, I think there's no question but that the leaders in the region have decided that they can go after the press pretty much as hard as they want, and that there's practically no consequences. And that includes internationally, and I would say even less so with the posture that the Trump administration is starting to take in terms of human rights and showing that they are less interested in putting pressure on governments in the region over human rights issues. That said, like what Bruce was talking about, they can't, though, hide from the people what they're experiencing. Mm. And that's the fundamental issue that they can't really resolve. That's the, you know, to go back to, I know it's a little bit of a cliche, but to go back to the way I talked about this being a renewal of the Soviet approach, the Soviet Union ultimately also couldn't hide what was happening inside the Soviet Union. And it is dangerous for countries, for any regime, it's dangerous for there to grow too large a gap between what you tell people what's happening and what's actually happening. You know, you go back to that old anecdote about, I wish I lived in the country that they show on TV every night. And I think that's where we already are in Turkmenistan. That's where we are really in all five countries if you were only watching the public broadcaster. But if you shut down all the independent media, then eventually people will simply stop consuming the stuff that you're feeding them. So I don't think it's as simple as they can just control and dominate the media space and use it to create all the impressions that they want about the system. They still can't hide what's happening in terms of economics, in terms of politics, as far as, you know, having governments that represent you. They can't change those facts.
Mm-hmm. So what can stop those authorities from doing further damage? I guess making them to sign to universal documents are not helping, I guess.
Well, certainly the approach of international treaties hasn't produced what it was hoped it would produce in the early 90s. I think there's a lot more that can be done to support independent media and to adapt to this new environment, and international supporters of free media have maybe been a little slow to take up some of those challenges, especially in working with exile and offshore media. So I think there's more that can be done there. And ultimately to remember and to recognize that there is demand. If people will, you know, as you all know with what RFERL does, if you produce good content, people will come for it. They want to know what's happening. They want to read about what's happening. They want media that reflects what's happening inside of their countries. And so if you can create good content that is documenting real events, you'll get response and you'll find an audience.
Right, right. Unfortunately, we have to end the discussion with these final notes. Earlier, Johan, you were talking about the role of international community, that they are not doing what they're supposed to do. So your note on that, is there anyone with the leverage to have an influence to those countries, to those leaders in Central Asia, to stop them from doing what they are doing right now?
Well, unfortunately, much relies on the shoulders of the United States and European Union. I mean, when you look around, there are not so many powers that have some leverage on Central Asian countries, and that could encourage them to leave press freedom alone. There is much work to be done at the level of the United States and European Union. I mean, this is the work that we, press freedom defenders and in general human rights organizations and all citizens need to do as well, to push our governments and the international institutions to do their work in this regard and not to give up with advancing human rights and defending these values that are supposed to be core of any democracy around the world. Of course, there are avenues that are being used by human rights activists in the UN, for instance, the Human Rights Council and the Human Rights Committee of the UN. So there are avenues. They are used to some extent, and clearly there is much work to be done to increase the impact and the leverage and the, well, first of all, the political willingness to engage with Central Asian countries on these issues.
Bruce, your point in this, final point, please.
Given the current political situation in the world, the Central Asians will always be able to count on Russian and Chinese help both for security concerns and really financial concerns right now. So there's not a whole lot of pressure outside countries can put on them. I think what needs to be hammered home by either exile organizations or organizations like Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, for example, is that the governments have been preaching the wrong narrative to the people. They're telling, especially Uzbek government, Turkmen government, and to a great extent the Tajik government increasingly, Kazakhstan certainly too, they've been telling the people for years that the people are lucky that they have a responsible government and the government is watching out for them. And that's why it's important that they have a powerful government. And we need to flip that and tell the people that the people are the power and they're the ones that keep the government in power. They're the ones that are the power in the country, and the government has to listen to them and act in their best interests, and that includes having a free and independent press.
Well, I can only second that, and there was an important word that Nate used just some minutes ago. Dangerous. I mean, this is something to tell also to these governments, that it's absolutely dangerous to crack down so hard on the last basis of freedom of information in countries such as Tajikistan, for instance, which overcome a terrible war, not so long ago. It is absolutely, it's almost suicidal to prevent democratic debates to take place peacefully in the countries, to prevent the various segments of the society to discuss. This is a very dangerous and probably counterproductive way to deal with the problems, the very serious problems of the countries. This is indeed something that should be stressed in any engagements with the authorities.
We usually try to end the discussion with some glimpse of hope, but I guess this is one of the topics that there is not much. So with this note, thank you very much, Johan Beer, Director of Reporters Without Borders, Eastern Europe and Central Asia Desk, for your time and thoughts. Also, big thanks to Nat Schenken, Director of Freedom House's Nations in Transit Project, and Bruce Fanier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlag Owazi. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time today.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.